Across the UK, on DAB Digital Radio, on the free Times Radio app, and via your smart speaker.
Matt Chorley on Times Radio with GoDaddy, the official domain name, website builder, and web hosting partner of Team GB.
Okay, let's talk secrets right now. Now, you might have heard the term freedom of information when you read about almost anything to do with government or public authorities. It's to do with getting a hold of expenses, election data, how many hospital beds or whatever there might be. But how do you get hold of this information and what do you do once you've got it? Well, freedom of information requests, I've done many of them over the years, not always terribly successfully, but they can be submitted by anyone to any public body to ask to see information held by them. And inevitably, journalists use them a lot to get hold of data, which otherwise the government might not want to release. But right now, the government is facing accusations that it's blocking the release of information that should be made public. A formal inquiry has now begun into whether or not the Cabinet Office is breaking transparency laws with its secretive Freedom of Information Screening Unit. The Cross-Party Commons Public Administration and Constitution Affairs Committee is going to investigate the operation of the unit known as the Clearing House that advises other government departments on how to respond to FOI requests. The unit attracted criticism after it was revealed last year that government departments, had been flagging up details of the journalists who'd made requests. It should be treated entirely separately, regardless of who actually has made a Freedom of Information request. Questions have also been raised in Parliament. Here's Labour's Fleur Anderson asking the Conservative Minister, Julia Lopez, whether any journalists are treated differently when it comes to FOI.
Mr. Speaker, last month, an information tribunal said that there is a profound lack of transparency about the operation of the Freedom of Information Clearinghouse. Can the Minister confirm categorically that every single Freedom of Information request received has been treated in exactly the same way, with no approach that's different for certain journalists or campaigners?
Ms. Lopez.
I can confirm that we treat those information requests on a case-by-case basis, and the background of who is asking is not a criteria for how we treat that request.
Oh, well, that was the Conservative Minister, Julia Lopez, insisting who is asking questions under Freedom of Information is not taken into account, which isn't quite the picture that lots of people have got. Right, we're going to speak to now some journalists who've tried to get some information out of the government. Let's speak, first of all, to Martin Rosenbaum, a former BBC journalist who specialises in Freedom of Information requests. Morning, Martin.
Good morning.
Just explain for people who don't know, because it's one of these things that they probably get, you know, it's in the third or fourth paragraph of a news story, but without giving any... go into great details, data obtained under Freedom of Information. Talk us through the process of you, Martin, think, right, I want to try and get hold of some data. How do you go about using Freedom of Information?
Well, a Freedom of Information request has to be in writing. So I would send off an email to the government department or whichever public body it is that's holding the information that I'm seeking. You're probably going to have to wait at least 20 working days. That's for the simplest answers to come back to you. Longer answers, which are more complicated, if you actually get the information, will take months, possibly sometimes even longer. So it can be a very slow and laborious process where it pays to be persistent. And that's absolutely one of the key lessons for any journalist or anybody else using Freedom of Information, that persistence is important. But I think the key thing I would say to anybody who's thinking about making an FOI request at the beginning, think very carefully about how you phrase it. Make sure you're phrasing it to ask for exactly the right information that you're wanting, so you don't go off heading down some kind of dead end, which is no use to you and a waste of everybody's time. And that's the thing. If I'm trying to get information, that's what I do. I think very carefully about how I'm going to phrase this request.
And so give us an example of that, of where a general, request for information gets knocked back because they say it's either too much information that, you know, they can't find it or they don't hold it or it's not available. And then you sort of tighten it up and you rewrite it and you sort of get to the nub of it. Give us an example of the difference.
So sometimes you find people who aren't used to putting in FOI requests. They ask for all information that you hold in relation to such and such, some particular issue. That's going to go over the cost limit that there is almost immediately. And what you've got to do instead is think very precisely about what, you know, am I after the minutes of this meeting, or is it about this correspondence between these two individuals, or is it between the documents held by this particular unit in this particular government department? And it pays to develop what's sometimes called a recorded information frame of mind, to be thinking about what is the information that's actually recorded with regard to this. It's no use asking, you know, what are the contents of people's heads? What are they planning to do? The content of someone's head is not something that is subject to freedom of information. It's what information has actually been recorded. So, you know, you might submit a broad request first, but then you end up narrowing it down in terms of what's the specific document or specific series of documents that are relevant to what I'm actually asking about.
And what's the, what is and isn't, you know, what's in people's heads isn't covered, but what is and isn't covered? So government papers, cabinet papers, that sort of thing, data, you know, statistics and that sort of thing generated by the government obviously is all covered. But where there's also been the conversation recently about private email addresses, you know, email accounts. There was Matt Hancock using a private email account. Is that covered? And then it goes more broadly into sort of WhatsApp text messages, Twitter DMs. Is it possible to FOI those two?
Theoretically, yes. It doesn't make any difference to the legal position, how the information, what system is used for recording or transferring the information. Doesn't make any difference whether the messages between ministers have been carved into tablets of stone or submitted over some kind of WhatsApp message. It doesn't make any difference. In theory, the law is the same. If it's on government business, it's in principle covered by FOI. However, in practice, inevitably, when people are using their own private devices, it's going to be more difficult to get that information. If you submit an FOI request for information that is on only on the personal phone in the Gmail account of a government minister, say, the FOI team at that government department is not going to go to the government minister and say, give me your Gmail password so that I can read all your Gmail and discover if there's anything relevant to this thing some annoying journalist is asking about. They're going to say, have you got anything on this particular topic? And inevitably, stuff will not be found. And inevitably, in practice, it is harder to get information that has been in personal devices as opposed to government computers, although the legal position is indeed the same.
Okay, let's bring in a couple more journalists who've tried to pick their way through the minefield of freedom of information. George Greenwood works on data and investigations for The Times. Hi, George.
Hello.
We've also got Susie Boniface from the Daily Mirror as well. Hi, Susie.
Hello.
So, George, give us your experience of trying to get things out of the government through freedom of information. And has there been a change, which is what the suggestion has been, that they are now less forthcoming in releasing this information?
Well, I think especially central government departments are always not very keen to give stuff up. It is embarrassing. I think that a lot of the time, there's, be it for political or, you know, civil service institutional inertia reasons, they will try and resist stuff if they don't have to give it to you. I think the change has been in recent years, and certainly during the pandemic, is how aggressive the Information Commissioner's Office has been in some of these cases. So at the moment, for people who don't know, the Information Commissioner's Office is the watchdog FOI. They can make legally enforceable orders for the departments to release stuff if they think the department's withholding stuff illegally or within breach of FOI or trying to redact too much. Now, it takes about 6 to 9 months now to get a substantive response from the Information Commissioner. I reported last week that the caseload had hit 2,000 cases. And the problem is, this enables government departments to just say, well, you know, we don't have to give them today. We'll use a spurious exemption that doesn't really apply. And it'll take a year for us to get to, for the commissioner to actually force us to release it. Now, you know, sometimes it doesn't matter. I mean, I did an investigation last month into child sexual exploitation, FOI, lots of documents from police. And actually those documents, many of them from 2018 and 2019. So, you know, while they can make it difficult to get information, it doesn't kill the story. But if you want to report on something that happened a month or two ago, and you want the internal correspondence about that, it starts to become a historic interest story rather than a front page news story. And so this is the sort of one of the big issues around how transparency is becoming harder, especially during the pandemic. And it'd be interesting to see how well that snaps back afterwards.
Susie Boniface, what's been your experience of the FOI process?
There isn't one. I do my own FOIs as a result of covering the nuclear test veteran campaign for the Mirror since 2002, which of course has some quite secretive and confidential stuff that's involved in it and to do with nuclear security and so on. And also, as a visiting lecturer at City University, I supervise undergraduates and postgraduate students doing sort of projects, and they're doing FOIs of themselves, and I'm guiding them on how to do it. And there's a fundamental problem, really, with the way our system is designed. When Tony Blair introduced it, he said, this is going to be like America. We'll have freedom of information. And then the legislation was written, and it was the other way around. So in America, there is a predisposition that everything should be published unless you can find a good reason that it isn't. So there are regular dumps of information on US government websites. And if I wanted to go and find out about American nuclear weapons tests in the Cold War, I can pull that information down. Same in Australia. In the UK, our Freedom of Information Act was written in such a way that there was a predisposition to assume nothing should be published unless you could find a good reason that it should be. Consequently, you have to fight to get every single thing out of them. And it doesn't matter if you're asking about arrest ratios or stop and search or nuclear weapons. They have the same attitude, which is no, why should you? And that causes a problem. There's a few other issues in that it's massively under-resourced and understaffed. There's one poor schmuck in every department, in every council or authority in the country who's having to deal with all of this. They get a lot of responses from people who are obsessed about something. They get a lot of requests from people that eventually end up being labelled as vexatious and therefore ignored, which is unreasonable, but that's how it is. They get a lot of people who are making requests. They don't quite understand the rules that have just been outlaid. So there's people making requests that are just far too expensive and can't get done. And then there's, because they are part of the organisation that is being asked to open itself to scrutiny, there's an institutional unwillingness to do it. I'm sitting here at the moment at my desk looking at an inch-thick bundle of paperwork, which is the result of not an FOI, but a special subject access request, which is when you can ask a public authority for how it has used your data. And bearing in mind, I've been a defence reporter and I've written about defence issues since 1999. I've travelled on nuclear submarines. I've overnighted on Navy warships. I have been on operations and I have written about nuclear weapons veterans since 2002. And so I emailed the SSAR department, the MOD, and said, could I please see how you have used my data? So you have a right to see how your name or your email address or your phone number has been used by a public organisation. And obviously, I'm a journalist. The reason I've done that is to see how they're discussing my stories and maybe get another story out of it. But I have the right as a citizen of this country to see how the government is using my data. And what I got back as a result was an inch-thick bundle of paperwork that was heavily redacted. And I've got one here where an email which has the from removed, the sent removed, the date is on it, subject, re-mirror story, nuclear test veterans, blank, 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 it's Susie Boniface, blank. Now, that is no help at all in terms of telling me the context in which my data was used. Who was it in response to? Who was writing about it? How are they using it? So on and so forth. And I had to appeal this, and it's taken months. I made that request, I think, back in March, and it finally got a result this week, and I got the full email sent to me. But I've got a bundle of paperwork to go through to do these appeal processes.
And they just hope that you will, in the end, just give up. You just give up.
And you know, the MOD, you know, mate, I've been doing it since 2002. Do I look like I'm giving up? No.
George, explain, George Greenwood from The Times, explain to us about this issue of the clearinghouse, how we found out about the clearinghouse and what the clearinghouse is doing from your perspective.
Yeah, sure. So the clearinghouse is something that has existed since about 2005. It is a department within the Cabinet Office that coordinates requests to other central government bodies and agencies to get consistent responses. And in theory, what it should be is to ensure that, you know, if you send a round robin for a certain type of information to all government departments, they have consistent response and give you the information you want. In practice, however, it has become more or less a screening unit where you know, certainly my data has been passed to them, that, you know, another official described me as the ever-active Mr. Greenwood to the cabinet officials. And they requests are flagged. I mean, I've seen at least one request of mine was flagged as very sensitive because he's a journalist. Now, an Open Democracy, a media outlet, has uncovered a lot of similar material about journalists, details being passed to them. This comes into the conflict of interest at the heart of FOIA, which is that government departments have institutional interests in not being embarrassed or having difficult information released if they don't have to. And, you know, what's happening, in, at least in some cases, is that requests are being flagged as highly sensitive media requests. Now, the government line is often anything handled by the clearinghouse or handled in these ways is handled just the same way, even if journalist data happens to find its way in. But it does create a conflict of interest. And there's the risk that a quiet phone call or post-it note or something is put on the request asking something not to go out. Then you have to go to the Information Commissioner to try and force them to release it. So there is, you know, in theory, there's nothing wrong with the clearinghouse. But in practice, you know, the PACAC committee will be investigating how it actually works in reality. And it does risk, you know, increase the risk that information is being withheld without good reason.
We should say, we did ask a government minister to come on the show. None was available, apparently. But a spokesperson for the Cabinet Office told us the clearinghouse is a small unit within the Cabinet Office that advises other government departments on how to respond to requests, which has been criticised by some outlets. It is a very small team of three people. It works to coordinate between different departments, and this increases efficiency and transparency. If each department responded differently to the same FOI, it would be more confusing for journalists. But these people are overworked, they say. However, in the last quarter, we received 8,000 FOI requests and 90% responded to within 20 working days. The spokesman added, we never take into account the names of different journalists. Accusations that some journalists appear on blacklists are entirely false. We treat each FOI blindly and equally. We are completely confident that we are operating within the Freedom of Information legal framework as well as data protection laws. So that's the view from the Cabinet Office. In a moment, we're going to hear from Maurice Frankel from the Campaign for Freedom of Information. And we'll also look at some of the stories which have only come out as a result of Freedom of Information requests. We'll do that next here on Times. It's Matt Jolly in association with GoDaddy, providing the helping tools you need to grow your business online.
Times Radio Breakfast with Asma Mir and Stig Abel.
On Times Radio Breakfast, after a £4 billion vote in Parliament over the government spending on foreign aid, we'll wonder what it means for the public finances.
Our team GB rower tells us about her final day in the UK before jetting off to Tokyo for the Olympics.
And Paralympian Tanny Gray-Thompson joins Times columnist Melanie Phillips to discuss the morning's news.
Times Radio Breakfast with Asma Mir and Stig Abel. Tomorrow morning from 6 on Times Radio.
Matt Chorley on Times Radio with GoDaddy, providing all the help and tools you need to grow your business online.
Good morning. Nice to have you with us. We're taking a look at freedom of information requests and the data that the government doesn't seem to want to release. Let's speak to Maurice Frankel now from the Campaign for Freedom of Information. Hi, Maurice.
Hi, Matt.
Nice to have you with us. What are your concerns about the way that the Freedom of Information Act is or isn't working?
Well, the first one is the delays are very substantial and too much for a lot of people. The information by the time it comes out, if it comes out, is often too late to be used. Secondly, and we think it needs more robust enforcement to ensure this doesn't happen. Secondly, the scope of the bill is not as wide as it should be. A lot of public services are provided by contractors now, and contractors are not properly covered by the Freedom of Information Act. Government is also now getting into the habit of trying to exclude newly established bodies from the scope of the Act altogether. It's doing that with a body that is being set up under a bill which has its second reading in the Commons tomorrow to investigate health service safety incidents. So that body, it'll be prohibited from disclosing information held in connection with its function of investigating safety incidents. That will override the FOI right of access. And the government has also excluded this new research agency dealing with high-risk, high-reward projects with a budget of 800 million, that's been excluded from the Freedom of Information Act. So it'll be less accountable than a parish council. Parish councils are subject to the Act. So there are a lot of difficulties with the way the Act is enforced, which it reinforces Martin's point earlier that you have to be very persistent and prepare to be very persistent to succeed in a lot of cases. It's not simply a matter of getting your question down, firing it in and waiting for the information to come back. You sometimes have to put up with a lot of problems on the way.
I suppose your point about the timeliness is that you could request some information, maybe something about what's happening right now with the unlocking of the coronavirus restrictions, and you might not get it back for 12 months, by which point, who knows where we will be in terms of the policy response. Let's focus a bit, just finally, on things we only know as a result of Freedom of Information Request. I mean, probably the most well-known is the MP's expenses scandal back in 2009, where journalist Heather Book actually began the sort of process of trying to submit an information Freedom of Information Act request for the release of details of MPs' expense claims. They were eventually released. It was during the process of them being prepared for release that the unredacted versions of all the receipts, of course, were leaked to the Daily Telegraph, and the rest is history. But Martin Rosenbaum, former BBC journalist specialising in Freedom of Information requests, what for you are some of the best examples of the Freedom of Information Act being used to release information that wouldn't otherwise have come out? What's on your sort of greatest hits list?
So one that's on my greatest hit list is actually an example of FOI in the end working well. So, you know, maybe we should also take a look at the positive side of things as well as the negative side of things, although it took me a lot of time to get the information. This was about the different failure rates in MOT tests of different makes and models of cars, which I asked the Department for Transport for in order to establish, well, which cars are most reliable. Well, first they said it's commercially confidential, we're not going to release it. I appealed to the Information Commissioner. 18 months later, I did get the information which showed that, on the whole, Hondas and Toyotas were less likely to fail MOT tests than Renaults and Peugeots. But the interesting thing about this now is this information is now routinely published. And it's one of a particular kind of class of information which has gone from being the sort of information which people like me as journalists had to fight the obstruction of government departments to get out in the open. Once it's out in the open, everybody says, well, it's a good thing this information is out there. It can help people buy the right cars or whatever. And now it is published routinely by the government. There are other similar examples for, you know, to do with food, hygiene, which has shifted from this kind of FOI dispute going on to being information that is regularly published by the Food Standards Agency, scores on the doors that you get in, you know, restaurants, food shops and so on. So, you know, there was some effort involved in that, but it's an example in a way of how a process has worked to get information out in the open routinely that should be out in the open.
Yeah, in fact, I remember one of the ones that I put in repeatedly was to do with John Bercow's foreign travel, and eventually the House of Commons Authority just said it would be published routinely. I think in part to stop me irritating them quite so much. Just finally, George Greenwood, your greatest hits from FOI.
Oh, I have to say my favourite one was getting a copy of the British Army's Guide to Strip Clubs in Estonia, which for some reason was a formalised document that I was given a full copy of. I have to say I agree with Martin on this, though. It is the kind of routine transparency that leads to proper public interest information that is so good. So I think the expenses scandal stuff is so good because we now have IPSA. We now can dig through the records and see exactly what our MPs are up to. But again, it's things with ministers as well. So it's the fact that we do have a transparency register for lobbying, you know, where ministers are being lobbied. Instead of having to FOI every single incident of a meeting with a minister, you know, often that stuff will be a public record now. And, it could be better. You know, I still have to wait for either letters and emails and stuff. But, you know, it's that process of making sure really important public interest information is out there that across several, you know, previous requests that has really improved, you know, transparency and the rule of law in the UK.
Well, we wait to see how all this pans out. Like I said at the beginning, the Commons Public Administration and Constitutional Affairs Committee has now launched an inquiry into the government's handling of freedom of information and that clearinghouse, which is advising other government departments on how to respond to requests. Lovely to speak to you. George Greenwood there, data investigations journalist for The Times. We also heard from Martin Rosenbaum, former BBC journalist and just FOI guru, and Susie Boniface from the Daily Mirror 2, and Maurice Frankel from the Campaign for Freedom of Information. Thanks very much for all joining us here on Times Radio to talk about freedom of information requests.